You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, April 8th, 2012, and this is episode 63 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from alexisguide.net, Alex Hibberling.
Happy Easter.
And filling in for Associate News Editor Jason Strasberg is Ben Carver from the Animation Aficionados podcast.
Hello.
And I'm your host, Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And on to the news. In our top stories, we've got two webcomics that are going pro. That's right. Both Penny Arcade and one other called Bucko are going to be printed. Oni Press has become the official printer for Penny Arcade comics, and the Bucko webcomic from Jeff Parker and Eric Amon are going to be printed off by Dark Horse Comics themselves. So I want to go ahead and give a shout-out to both comics, and congratulations on making it to the lofty air of the print industry. Next up, let's go ahead and go on over to Alex. Alex?
This week in Buzz, we have another announcement out of Emerald City Comic Con, which was last weekend. Brian Michael Bendis is going to be writing a how-to-write comics book. Found via Comic Book Resources Twitter and on comicbookresources.com, Brian Michael Bendis is going to be writing a book which he calls basically the advice that he'd give to everybody who has always asked him about advice for writing comics. It's going to be part of writing and getting your career in comics, and not so much instructing readers on how to write in his style. And, you know, he's also going to cover things like, you know, we read in the paper every week, did something wrong, didn't sign something, and didn't protect themselves with a contract. So he's going to be covering that too. And for more, you can see The Hollywood Reporter, and of course, stay tuned. Next up in Buzz, the 2012 Eisner Awards have been announced. In the digital comics category, we have Bahrain by Josh Newfield, Battle Pug by Mike Norton, Delilah Dirk and the Turkish Lieutenant by Tony Cliff, Outfoxed by Dylan McConis, and Sarah and the Seed by Ryan Andrews, found via comicsalliance.com. And along that note, the Eisners this year have decided to drop the Best New Series category. Apparently, they did this because they didn't find enough contenders that reached the level of quality that they were looking for, said Eisner Awards Administrator Jackie Estrada. And of course, a response to that from Phil Heister on his Twitter account, Eisner Committee, you could throw a rock through Artist Alley at SDCC and hit a full slate of worthy Best New Series nominees. In fact, I'm willing to turn the entire Comics Award process over to throwing rocks through Artist Alleys. And that is it for Buzz.
And now with our business section, let's go ahead and head over to Ben. Ben?
All right. Starting off, Graphically is shutting down their iOS and Android comic book apps, and they're focusing on self-publishing. Looks like here what they're trying to do is they're trying to become more of a marketplace, and I'm guessing here it's because of they're trying to use their own conversion fees versus the in-app fees that both platforms have. And, you know, this is interesting what they're doing. And in the other news, we have with us the news that Mark Waid is talking about the cost of print. And, basically he posted an article on his own website about print math, about the cost of a digital versus print, and exactly how much money comics make.
Okay, and that brings it back to me for our legal section. We want to go ahead and head over first to Arizona. Apparently, Arizona House Bill 2549, which is one that would update the state's telephone harassment law to apply to the internet and other electronic communications, is receiving more than its fair share of disagreement with it. This was passed back in March of 29, that's a long time ago, and signed by Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona. But now there are a bunch of people who are saying it's censorship and are afraid of some of the repercussions that may occur from this type of bill. For more information about it, go ahead and read the article over on MediaCoalition.org, and also make sure to hit the state of Arizona's homepage as well, where they have all the House bills listed. Next up, article over on CNET.com, and we all know how applicable they are, saying Apple finally meets its match. Hint, it's called the DOJ. That's right, the Department of Justice is taking a look and forcing a settlement on the ebook pricing after a lengthy investigation. And it, no matter which way happens, any deal they say is going to force Apple to bend. We got to hear it for government regulation. We all know how well that works out. And then after that, let's go ahead and go back to Alex for a look at our education section. Alex.
Right, there's just one story in education this week. Over on the Escapist magazine, the Jim Sterling, the star, I guess, of the Jimquisition videos, talks about the infamous ending of Mass Effect 3. Now, I've not played Mass Effect 3, so I don't even know what anyone's talking about with all this stuff, but I've seen it all over the internet. And apparently, lots and lots of fans are very unhappy with the ending of the game. So he goes into a discussion about changing the end of a story, or a story in general, based on, you know, the input of the fan base. Does changing the ending to a video game destroy it as a creative endeavor? Does altering it to cater to fan demand set interactive art back? And how much influence should an audience have over a creator, and are they entitled to their opinions? It's equally applicable to webcomics, since, you know, you're putting it up for a captive audience, and in the past, some people have changed their stories based on reader input. I know I did that a few times very secretly in my old comic, so it's definitely a video you should check out, and it raises some good points about creators versus fans. And over to Tom for tech.
Well, right before the tech section, we're going to go ahead and take our first break, and we'll be back with more news, including that aforementioned tech section, right after this.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Welcome back to episode 63 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Let's go ahead and take a look at our tech section. We're going to go ahead and start off about this great new iPad app that actually started off life as a Microsoft app. That's right. There's one called called Paper, brought to you by 53, a company that previously worked on the Courier initiative for Microsoft. What this is it's a free application that basically is what it is. It allows you to have a little sketchpad right there on your iPad. Now, when I say free, of course, we've got to put the caveat on there. That's just the basic app itself. If you want anything special like brushes or any other sort of additions onto the program, they're going to charge for those. A good example is each additional brush is going to be $2 each purchased in-app. But they do have a video over for it, and the story is over on Engadget.com. And finally, let's go ahead and give a little bit of a follow-up to a story that we've talked about a lot in recent times, and that's the $5 voucher from Marvel Comics. When you buy an electronic version, you're supposed to get a $5 voucher to purchase the same comic over at a comic store. But apparently, as of April 3rd, on the article over on BleedingCool.com, people have not yet received it. Now, I have read reports later that people have received this as a print-off in their email. So let's see if we can't get a little bit more of information on it, and we'll have more reporting on this at the next podcast. And now, let's go ahead and go on over for our next section about people in the news with Alex. Alex?
Over on the BeaumontEnterprise.com blog, an artist, Ursula Vernon, gave an interview about her online work. Now, if you've never heard Ursula's name before, you've probably seen her work if you've spent any amount of time on the internet in the past 5 or 6 years. She is the artist who actually painted the Lalwhat Pear, which she originally titled the Biting Pear of Salamanca. This pear ended up on 4chan's image board with the Lalwhat caption under it, and has since propagated itself throughout the internet. And she gives an interview about the biting pear and about her other work, which includes work in the indie comic scene. You can find more of her work at UrsulaVernon.com. And, of course, the interview is over on blog.beaumontenterprise.com.
And next up, let's go ahead and go on over to Ben for a look at some of the opinion stories in the news.
All right. One interesting opinion coming from Ars Technica, one of my favorite news sites, actually. It's because I'm a techie, is about comics and iPads, or will the new iPad track paper readers? This is fascinating because the article says iPad specifically, but the article is more about digital as a whole versus, you know, digital versus print versus one specific device. It's just iPad is the title because the new iPad's hot. But this is still a very good article. Talks about why print is, you know, basically dying. And next up, we also have comic artists should diversify. This is from the Washington Post. Talks about how comic artists are taking second jobs and doing other work other than just comic work. And this is a trend that I've been seeing for a long time. This is a trend that, this is like the dirty little secret of most comic artists, even back in the 80s. You know, lots of them were also working for some Fortune 500 companies as graphic designers. It's actually very fascinating that people are talking about now. And let's see. Finally, on the opinion section, we have, Marvel's Joe Quesada, talking about the value of digital comics as the graphics. This article is talking about the interactivity that can be done as an app, you know, through the internet that you can't do on print. Until, you know, we perfect that interactive cardboard that they had in Minority Report. But yeah, this is an interesting article on Gizmodo, which is interesting. It talks about how they can zoom into specific panels, give specific attention to effects, really, really, you know, focus on individual things that you really can't do interactively with print. Okay, and that's it for the opinions.
And now let's go ahead and take a look at some of our tidbits with Alex.
The Kickstarter campaign for the Skin Horse collection achieved its goal in 12 hours. Now, granted that the donation goal was only like $4,000, that's still a really great achievement. And we congratulate Shannon Garrity and Jeffrey Wells. And of course, next up over on the Daily Trojan, Nick Slayton offers an introduction to webcomics for what appears to be his college paper.
Exactly.
That's a pretty good introduction to it. So, yay, comics.
And now, let's go ahead and take a look over to some of our oddities. And for that, let's do our usual oddity with Ben.
Well, I don't know how to say thank you, Tom, to that, but we have this interesting article on the Comics Alliance about how The Hunger Games is the young adult fantasy version of Akewood's The Great Outdoor Fight. This, of course, is a humor piece, but it is somewhat funny, but it's also wrong because, as everyone knows, The Hunger Games is not a rip of Battle Royale or even Akewood. It's a rip of The Running Man. And I'm sorry, I've been telling that joke all week. Anyways, we also have from Paper Robots and an Extreme Tech article about 3D printers. Everyone knows about 3D printers, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, this is about how you can use just a regular 2D printer and some circuit boards to make your own walking paper robot. What applications might have other than freaking out your little sister, I don't know, but it looks damn cool. And finally, you know, Google, one of the biggest tech companies in the world, is doing some augmented reality with glasses. And what does this mean? This means you wear a pair of glasses. You know, you don't look quite Jordy LaForge, but basically this basically projects in front of your eyes a HUD, you know, just like you're a fighter pilot, but it's stuff about the prices of products you see or what street you're walking down, distance to where you want to go, stuff like that. It's like you have an interactive screen in front of your eyes. And the line to get these glasses is huge. I mean, you know, I wonder if it hooks up to an Android phone, but I bet it does. And you know, this is really fascinating. I've been actually following these the Google Glasses project for a long time, and it's very interesting that they're finally out. They're finally out to a select pair. Okay, and back to you.
Yes, if we don't have enough people with driving and texting on the road. But let's go ahead and take our second break. We're going to go ahead and have our opinion pieces and our discussion right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to episode 63 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, and it's time for discussion and opinions. With me today is, from alexisguide.net, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
And from the Animation Aficionados podcast, Ben Carver.
Hello.
And of course, I'm your host and moderator, once again, Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics, and it's 910cmx.com. First up, we're going to talk about is the Eisner Awards. That's right. One of the big stories, one of the big awards for people in the comic print industry and the comic electronic industry are the Eisner Awards. And as we mentioned earlier, they had the nominees for the best digital comic being Bahrain by Josh Neufeld over at www.cartoonmovement.com/comic/24. Battle Pug by Mike Norton, which is also in print, I believe, at www.battlepug.com. Delilah Dirk and the Turkish Lieutenant by Tony Cliff over at www.delilahdirk.com. Outfoxed by Dylan Mekonis at www.dylanmekonis.com/outfoxed. And Sarah and the Seed by Ryan Andrews over at www.ryan-a.com/comics/sarahandtheseed01.htm. Of course, we'll have those over on our website as well. But let's go ahead and talk about that first of all. I mean, best digital comic, is that including the new ebook stuff, which is coming out as well? Is this solely webcomics? And why is this stuff, with the exception of Battlebug, that nobody's ever heard of?
Well, I'm looking at this stuff, and a lot of this stuff is a lot more, not to say bad, but it's not bad at all. Bad's not the word I'd use, but it's definitely stuff that's more indie.
More esoteric?
A little more arty.
Yeah, it's actually, let's see here. Outfoxed actually is the one that grabbed the most interest from me immediately, I have to say. Because there's something about the Outfoxed art style that I like. But the rest, not so much. But, yeah, these are not comics I read often. I mean, I read so many web comics, and none of these were ever hit my radar. It's just for history's sake, Tom, was Phil Foglio ever nominated for Best Digital?
I believe he was, but I'd have to double check on that. I mean, like I said, these are the Eisners, and trying to remember who hosted the Eisners last year. I think it was Phil. So he may exclude himself, or something else may have happened. But I mean, there are so many great webcomics out there. I mean, this isn't like them canceling the new series category. I've got no idea where they pull these out of a hat. I'm sorry, Battle Pug as one of the best digital comics.
I think what they're looking for is, if I may be so bold, I think that they're looking at things from a publisher editor point of view, which one of these can easily be rebranded and repackaged as a print.
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't know what the mentality behind it is. There really is. When you look at webcoms, you just can't classify it all as new. I mean, you've got so many different categories for the different print comics. I mean, whether it be the crime drama or the superhero. I mean, why are they just putting all of webcomics under this one umbrella, especially when there is such a range of quality, talent, storyline, and some of the things that some of these comics seem to be missing?
Who puts in nominations for the Eisner Awards?
That I actually couldn't answer.
Because I know for, like, the, what are they, the Harvey Awards, it's the membership of the NCS.
Right, and I believe it is,
I'm just not very familiar with who actually is the voting body of the Eisner Awards. To Wikipedia!
And while you look at that, let's go ahead and quickly drop down to the Eisner's Dropping the Best New Series category. Again, this is... it's one of those things that just boggles my mind. I mean, the fact that they say they don't have anybody of quality to be Best New Series. If you don't have enough in there, I mean, you take the best of what's available. For them to eliminate a category because they didn't like any of the nominees is ridiculous. It's a slap in the face of people who do things. And I still find it hard to believe that they couldn't find anything of the new series created last year that isn't of quality. Or what they consider quality. I mean, looking at some of these comics that they have for Best Digital Comic, I can imagine that what they consider quality is a far cry from what I consider quality, or many of our listeners consider quality. But why? I mean, what would be a good explanation that y'all could think of that they would use to drop a category like this, especially one that's this important?
I think they're still trying to come over from the facts that that the world's changing, you know, print is dying a slow death, and the gatekeepers that were once there are no longer having power. This is almost reminiscent of them taking the ball and saying, "I'm going home. You're not playing the way I want to play," because if they can't find anything worth looking at in the for new, you know, best new in what's currently existing, then they had to start looking at digital, and they quite aren't ready for that yet, because they like digital to be in its own little separate single category right now. They like that. They're okay with that. If you ask them to, you know, include digital in the voting for best new series, I think you're going to blow their brains.
Well, thanks to Alex going over to Wikipedia, we've got a little bit of information. Nominations in each category are generated by a 5-member panel, then voted on by comic book professionals. That explains a lot about it. I mean, a lot of what comes up does seem like the Academy Awards, where it's not so much what the average person would like or consider quality, but rather the rarefied air of the esoteric ivory towers. And...
yeah, and if the nominations are only coming from 5 people, that's probably not going to be as large a breadth as the general audience for webcomics and digital comics.
These are probably the only 5 webcomics they've ever heard of.
Yeah, and I just checked the one of the 5 that they nominated as best, and one of them only has like 8 pages.
Good.
Actually, yeah. One only has 5 pages, pardon me. Sarah and the Seed only has 5 pages. It's a cute little children's story. It reminds me of lots of like children's books I've read, but this, you know, it's only 6 pages.
It really is to me, I consider that a slap in the face of the people who have put in a lot of work to get a new series out there in the digital media, whether it be ebook or it be webcomic, where they put in their deadlines, they do the work, whether it be daily, weekly, biweekly, or even off schedule. I just shake my head at some of this stuff. I mean, granted, I'll never win an Eisner now, but I know how much work that we all put into our particular webcomics.
Well, it's insulting to the name of the award itself, because if there is anybody who encouraged new talent, no matter where it came from,
exactly,
it was Will Eisner. It
was
Will
Eisner was a maverick in his own right with some of the stuff. I mean, that's part of the reason why he's considered the grandfather of comics, because a lot of the styles and a lot of the storytelling and a lot of the medium that was used was based off of him. I mean, there's a handful of people you can look at and say they were the major influences. And that's the reason, as he's got his name on this award, because he was one of the major influences on comics.
And, you know, like I said, he found talent anywhere. It didn't matter where you came from, who you were. It didn't matter to him. All that mattered to him was talent and the ability to tell a story. Will Eisner was a prince. He was kind and gentle with everyone he dealt with. He treated everyone fairly. It's, like I said, for them to put his name on this and treat this as you know, like a boys' club here, where they can, you know, basically, you know, look so smug about it. Well, this is what we consider what the medium is. It's an insult to the man.
Mm-hmm. No argument here. No arguments here.
Nope.
let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the Marvel $5 coupon. Now, I have taken a look at it, and the coupon did come out. It was several days late for some of them, and I do have read that some of people did not receive them yet. And, of course, the coupons were very limited as to where they could be used and what they could be used for. But, again, this is, I mean, they're trying to promote an electronic thing. And for an email to be, with this coupon to be late like this or not be received, I think that's inexcusable. We've argued back and forth, me and Eric and some of the others here, about Marvel doing this. I mean, yeah, it's to prop up the print industry, but having this type of coupon just strikes of desperation in some of the sales. And then is this just more bad press that Marvel's going to get because of this?
Well, I think so. The biggest problem with that is as we all can see, you should never be late with a digital coupon. This is supposed to be an emailed coupon. And you shouldn't be late with that at all. It's, you know, you either have the QR codes or you don't. You either have the partnerships already in place with the brick and mortar stores or you don't. You don't, you know, I suspect that there were lots of things where the deals weren't finalized when they went ahead with this, thinking that they can get it ahead in time. But if you delay anything with digital, the delays just kill you, because digital's all about speed. It's all about right here, right now. And to just fall short on that kills expectations immediately.
Alex, I mean, I know you're not really a comic book buyer, but if you were to go something that had a digital coupon like this and a delay occurred with this, would this be something that you'd want to try a second time?
Probably not. I mean, it happens with retailers all the time where they don't deliver something they promised, and it will hurt their sales if they cannot follow through with their commitments.
I agree on that. I mean, I personally thought that the $5 coupon was just a bad idea in the first place. One of the things that Eric and I actually agreed upon, I can see where it could be necessary for the purchase to draw in the people to buy the digital version. But it just, especially after this, the whole thing left a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, if you're going to put out such like a lost leader like that and then you screw it up, you're going to lose a lot more money than what you would have already with an outrageous $5 coupon in the first place.
But let's go ahead. Our next topic for discussion is going to be about changing the story based on fan input. All three of us have written webcomics and stories in the past. Now, the internet and having webcomics is great for that immediate feedback, but is it really worth it to take the input and change your story on that? I know that in the print industry or the animation, television, radio industry, they are not allowed to look at some of the fan input or fan suggestions because they could be sued for that. Yeah, we're a little more fast and loose here in the webcomic world, but is it really worth it to go through and change a storyline because of what the fans say they like or they don't like? A good example with this is the Oceans Unending from Pete Abrams over on Sluggy Freelance. He was getting burned out on doing regular Sluggy and tried something new and received a lot of heat for it.
Well, I think you have to listen to your fans. Every creator that has fans has to listen to their fans, because if you alienate your fans enough, you're not going to have fans anymore. And obviously, there has to be a certain disconnect as well, because there has to be a happy medium, a happy level of what it means to your fans, what it means to you. It's I never had fans.
Yeah, I think it has to be a mutual respect from both parties.
Well. In many cases, it isn't a mutual respect. Sometimes the fans get a little too rowdy with JMS and Babylon 5. There was some guy who was saying, "Hey, the story that you're working on is getting a little too close to the fan fiction I wrote on based on your story, and you might have read this BBS post years ago. I'm going to sue you." And JMS had to dig up years worth of notes to prove that, hey, he wrote his own story in his own universe.
But legal opinions aside on this, I mean, I personally am one who, when I write a story, I almost never change anything about it. If somebody guesses a major plot point that I've got, yeah, I might change it a little bit around that. But I develop my stories years in advance and have everything plotted out. To make a change based off of fan input, which is an immediate thing, it kind of skews the way that I work.
Well, I can understand that, but, you know, back to the article in question about changing game's ending, they're talking about Mass Effect 3. And if we look at it, the ending was already changed based on the original author's intent to the ending we got because of a leak. So this ending was a knee-jerk, quick reaction ending anyways. And in other game news, Bethesda got some flack over the Fallout 3 ending. Not near as much as BioWare with the Mass Effect 3 ending. And Fallout 3 did get an expansion DLC called Broken Steel, which greatly changed how the ending worked and gave 6 additional hours of gameplay, and Bethesda was praised for it.
And BioWare has reported that they are going to have downloadable content, which not necessarily amends, but, quote, enhances the ending to Mass Effect 3.
I'm saying that it's not always a bad thing. Like I said, Bethesda was seen better for it by the fans and by the people who own Bethesda, because Broken Steel was considered one of the best DLCs the game had. And I mean, you know, this, you know, game publication and webcomics are not entirely related. It's unless you're Captain Steve, but really what we're looking at here is fans are claiming a certain percentage of ownership of a property, and sometimes that percentage is disproportionate because with a webcomic, there's not that much interactivity in it. But that changes drastically with a game. A game has so much more interactivity than a comic.
But there is, I mean, a certain point to where the fans, and I've seen this in the print media, I've seen this in television, I've seen this in radio, to where the fans feel a certain amount of ownership and time invested in what they've done. I mean, they went out, they spent the money on a comic book, so they feel that they are entitled to have an opinion on this. And unfortunately, with webcomics, it seems like that opinion, even if they donate or don't, if they buy merchandise or don't, they feel that they've invested time and that a lot of them can do your stories better than you can. Now, granted, some people probably could do stories better than some webcomic writers could. But is it it goes back to the matter of, is it worth it to just change something based off of fan opinion? Because it is, especially with webcomics, where we see page, you know, maybe a page a day or a page a week, to where you are not seeing the whole thing in the full scope.
I think it's important that the creators stand by their ground, especially with webcomics, because it's different with a webcomic because there's. There's nothing. There's no real money going down to read the webcomic in most webcomics cases. You're basically just publishing essentially for free in hopes that you have people stick around long enough to be interested in other things you might be selling on the side, if you are selling. If you're just doing it as a hobby, it's not even a part of the equation at all. I mean, if someone told me, you know, reading my webcomic right now, and they say, oh, I don't want you to do this, I can tell this is about to happen, I'll say, well, I'm going to do it anyways. Because I don't make money off my webcomic. I put money into my webcomic, but I don't make money off of it. But, so I get enjoyment out of seeing art drawn with my story. If anything, I'm the consumer here. as much as the people that read it with me.
But there comes a point to where, I mean, there's artistic integrity versus consumerism. To me, it's not so much integrity as it is who it is who's dictating the story. These people didn't come up with these characters. I mean, and I'm sorry for the fans who like the stuff that I write, and I appreciate some of the stories that I've seen and some of the things that I've heard about the characters that I've written for or some of the other comics I've worked with. But it comes down to these are stories that have been plotted out. These are characters that the creators probably know better. And these aren't your creations. Rather than telling us what to do and then getting steamed when it doesn't occur, create your own comic.
With my characters is the caveat there.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I know I sound like a heartless SOB, but I mean, I actually had somebody come point blank and tell me that they could write stories better than I could, which, you know, maybe it's my own ego, but I doubt. My character's better than I can, which I know isn't true. So, I mean, it's... I've always stuck by the stories that I've written, whether people like them or not. And I've gotten enough back to where I actually think that, yes, people do like them. And Alex, I mean, I know that yours is more slice of life. How would it feel if somebody said they could write your comic better than you?
Well, if they make more money than me, then I'd be like, hey, sure, we can trade lives. That'd be awesome.
One guy did. One guy did. I finally had to sue him because he tried to steal my characters.
Yeah, I mean, there's a line between fan fiction and obnoxiousness.
Yeah. Certainly.
Yeah, I mean, fan fiction is a great thing. I mean, I know that a lot of creators like reading seeing their fan fiction. A lot of them don't like seeing fan fiction. You know, they are that protective of their characters. And especially in the print industry where there is so much more money behind it. But I mean, part of it is integrity, part of it is ego, part of it is the reality of what it is.
This argument is kind of in the same family as, should George Lucas have made all those changes to Star Wars, or does it belong to the fans, or does George Lucas, you know, what George Lucas does with his own creation.
That's actually, well, I mean, because with Lucas, he went through and took an existing storyline and changed it, not because of fan input, but because of his own input. And the fans were saying, leave it as is. So it's actually the exact opposite type of
discussion. Leave a version that's unmolested so we can make our choice.
Now, of course, I mean, maybe the prequels would have been a lot better if he had listened to the fan input.
Well, the thing with Lucas is, one has to remember, is he actually went in front of Congress and tried to make law that stated that creators could not go back and recut films that they once made. And then for him to just, you know, blatantly turn around and do that himself is, you know, textbook hypocrite.
Well, I think we can all pretty much agree that we as creators do love hearing input from the fans, but some of us aren't going to be changing our stuff because of it. I know creators that have and kind of regretted it afterwards because it wasn't speaking with their voice or their character's voice, it was rather somebody else's voice.
Okay, and what's the last topic, Tom?
Well, we're going to be looking over at Joe Quesada. Talking about how the new Infinite Comics, Marvel's Infinite Comics, which they've been trumpeting for a while now, changes how comics are created. Now, we talked a little bit about this and how the value of this is within the graphics. And I can see to a point what he's saying, because in the article it does mention that with something like the iPad, you can actually have a variable resolution, which make up a phrase. If you take a magnifying glass to a print comic, especially older ones, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, you're going to be losing a lot of detail. It's going to get grainy. And they've done this where they've used cut and paste to blow up some of the art from a particular scene. Whereas when you're drawing for the electronic, you can get as detailed as you want, and then people can zoom in and see a lot of this detail, which wouldn't be available any other way.
Well, it's an interesting idea, and it's one that I actually applaud, but the problem with it, to say it's coming out to iPad, is one thing I hate is, you know, the wall of, oh, you have to make sure you have this device or that device. I'd much prefer it if it's web-based, you know, browser-based versus being based in an app. Well, and I know that's a minor caveat, but it's still one that I will make.
Yeah, I've got no problem with it, with the ebooks and electronic comics over on the iPad or on the Android or on web. I think that what he's saying has some things. I mean, he's got a line here that some artists draw lines that are so thin they don't even print. But these
that's
things
true.
Will be coming up on an electronic version. And they, even, especially something like the print coloring. Coloring is such a difficult art that you aren't, in print, I mean, you're basically breaking it down to four colors unless you pay for extra inks.
And whereas, they won't.
Yeah, well, they will on rare occasion. I remember the big deal with the Killing Joke where they had the lime green printing on the, I mean, that was a fifth color they paid for specifically for that.
But was it a Pantone?
No, it was a specific lime green thing. I mean,
I guess it was a Pantone. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah. However, you don't have that problem on an e-version, whether it be web or whether it be the ebook version. You can get to a lot more detail, a lot more colors, a lot more richness and quality that you cannot get in a print version.
Well, it is using the new medium, the digital medium, correctly. It's absolutely the right move that more publishers should be making. It's just, the biggest question is, how can we replicate that without needing without an app? It's, you know, like I said, I'd love to see something like this being done entirely in a browser is what I think.
Yeah, or some sort of downloadable app for the computer where I don't have to view it on my phone since I don't have a smartphone and I'm not going to be able to afford one for quite some time probably.
The new Nokia Lumia phone is coming out tomorrow. It's at $100.
Yeah, can't afford it.
Now, I do want to go into some of the other stuff that was in this article that I think is interesting because it talks about how Quesada does his own art and he uses the Wacom Cintiq, you know, which is even I, as a non-artist, am impressed by this system. You know, touch-sensitive screen on a monitor. And uses Wacom's version of the Autodesk sketchbook. Can't use Photoshop like everybody else, can you?
I still draw on paper because I try tablet drawing. I can't do it.
Well, are you talking tablet or are you talking the Cintiq?
I can't afford a... Well, actually, I can. I just don't want
to. No, I mean, I've used the Cintiq on demonstrations. And like I said, even for a non-artist, this is a beautiful thing. But it does, I mean, it does allow you to do a lot more than with paper. I know that the person who I do the webcomics with, Darren Brown, also works on paper, uses specific types of Japanese calligraphy brush pens for his inking. And then scans that and touches things up over a computer. But even at a high resolution, you know, I can look at the difference between something like bitmap and vector, where vector is easily scalable for quality. But, I mean, the drawbacks between that versus bitmap, where you won't get some of the coloring that you would with the bitmap. So, I mean, I think as much as I joke about the Infinite Comics and some of the things that they've got going on, which just sound like so much nonsense, especially to us old readers, I can appreciate some of the stuff that is being done with this for the enhancement of the product itself. Maybe not the augmented reality.
Yeah, that's a bit much. I'm afraid they'll be like the Ang Lee Hulk movie.
Yeah.
To give an example, I think everyone knows what I'm talking about here.
Don't make me Ang Lee. You wouldn't let me when I'm Ang Lee.
Hulk don't know how to quit you.
But I do. I mean, I think that the ebooks, especially with what Kaseda is saying here, you're going to be getting a much better product visually than you could in print.
Looking at this, I probably could afford a Cintiq, but I really would rather have the $2,000. It does look nice, though. It's just $2,000. Wow. I can't justify slapping that much down. If I'm going to put down $2,000, I'm just going to get a new computer instead.
Well, all depends upon what you're using it for. I mean, for those of you who have not used a Cintiq and you are artists, I recommend that you go try one of the demos, which you can find at some of the tech shows or things like that. But I think I'm going to bring this show to an end. We're a little shorthanded this week because of the Easter and Passover holidays. So I want to go ahead and thank those who are with us. I want to thank our Associated News Editor, Jason Strasberg, who compiled our news like usual, and Eric Kimball, who assisted with that. And here in the studio with me today, from alexesguide.net, Alex Heberling.
See you next week.
And from the Animation Aficionados podcast, Ben Carver. And Ben, what's that URL?
AnimationAficionados.com.
And I'll go ahead and wind it up. I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. Make sure to visit us over at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com, where you can see all of our stories, download this podcast, and get more information about what's going on behind the scenes. And with that, I'll see you in the funny papers.